My name's Dan Abnett, and I will be attending the Black Library Expo at Chestermere on the 6th and 7th of October this year. I hope to see everyone there.
The Emperor expects, right, Dan?
Considering that, was it nine of us are coming all the way from Fething, England to Alberta to do this, I think the least you can Fething well do is show up and say hello to us.
ChestermereExpo.ca. Pour something flammable into your glass, it's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang, with me as always is Nathan. Nathan, oh, this cast is already starting out in a very weird way. So let's just dive right into the good stuff. What did you do for this week in hobby?
I am painting some horrors. I got one and a half done. I was assembling quite a few for a while, so... Yeah, and basically I just signed up for the Tournament of Champions, which is a sort of escalating tournament here in Cowtown, first weekend of November, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And due to the fact that it starts at 1,800 and goes all the way up to 3,000, I need another core unit.
Right.
So, you know, I was just like, I could paint more of what I have, which seemed lame, so I basically just flipped a coin and decided between horrors and demonettes. Horrors one.
Gotcha. Yeah, I finished up painting my Directorate fleet for RSN. I was very happy with that. Just as of yesterday, we completely sold out the Firestorm Armada tournament that I'm going to be running in September there in Cowtown. So we may be able to get a seventh table, which means there may be two more slots opening up soon. So if you're still interested, by all means, post something on the Facebook group or go down to Imaginary Wars and actually talk to Kyle directly. And they should be able to let you know one way or another what we're going to be doing. But I picked up a bunch more Terrans. I kind of started getting my Terrans cleaned up and put together so I can start painting them. I'm very excited for them. But cool. Mostly just kind of playing Firestorm. I was trying to get some games of Warhammer in, but it seems Warhammer is the elusive beast for me right now. Every time I try to plan a game, it seems to fall through, or the people are just, you know, saying, oh, well, let's play 40K, or oh, let's go play Firestorm Armada. I haven't played enough of it, you know, so... That kind of tends to be the case, but I don't mind too much. It gives me a chance to test out some of those scenarios.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I am drinking some scotch. What are you drinking today?
I have some red rice ale, which is a Japanese beer. And in case I finish it too quickly, which seeing as how I went through a third before we started recording is likely. I also have I didn't think I'd been drinking that much. Bacon maple ale as on standby.
There you go. Sounds good to me. All right, so let's dive right into higher learning for this week's episode, which is the Eldar for Warhammer 40,000. I think that the most of Eldar players, they're kind of a strange beast. I know I've said beast twice in the last 3 minutes, but I'm going to say it again. Eldar players are a strange beast. They're the kind of people who tend to not update their lists a ton. Kind of regardless of whether or not that you would be playing it. Now that's in the
defense of Eldar players, their code, like their actual list and their like points of economy of this unit is shit, this unit is good, hasn't changed in almost 15 years. So there really is no reason for an Eldar player.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at. Well, that's kind of what I was getting at is. Their army, their codex doesn't really allow them to change a whole lot, but like there are certain things that you can stack that make Eldar lists really, really effective, and that always seems to kind of change from edition to edition and book to book. What only ever seems to change with Eldar players is which guns they have magnetized to their Warwalkers. That's about it.
Yeah.
That's what changes between editions. Is which
last
guns
codex were... was star cannons.
Last codex it was star cannons. Lasers. It's scatter lasers now. I mean...
That's a good point.
It's pretty good, right? And yeah. I mean... That, you know, I think that's the big thing to talk about when you talk about, you know, how they've changed in this edition. You know, you talk about flyers and you kind of talk about the way the glances work. And like we were saying, it changes around quite regularly. And now that power weapons are AP3 instead of just no armor saves, you know, they have to kind of take that second look at anything that they have with a power weapon, which, to be granted, isn't a ton. But for the most part, you know, you're always going to be struggling with Eldar when you're looking at Guardians and you're looking at Dire Avengers and the points cost of them. And you're always going to kind of be struggling with some of the various Force Organization choices, but usually their vehicles are the Stars, so you're always going to see, you know, the big Wave Serpent fleets and things of that nature.
Yeah, you know, poor Eldar players is kind of where I'm at this point in time, because, I mean, yes, you are right. You are going to see usually, you know, kind of Eldar Air Forces filled with Wave Serpents and Falcons. The biggest reason for that is the points economy in that book is shit. Because, you know, unfortunately for Eldar players, is the Eldar Codex was the last codex before Games Workshop decided that as their design philosophy moving forward, everything gets cheaper.
Right.
You know, and like I said, the reason I do say, you know, unfortunately for Eldar players is unlike much older books that are going to get redone soon enough, Eldar players have just had to wait and watch as every single army comes out getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, or just plain better for their points. And that is really what plagues the Eldar Codex. You have such bad points costs on certain units. I mean, Guardians, I love the idea of Guardians. I think that the Guardian model looks really great considering how old it is.
Mm-hmm.
But fuck, 8 points for that? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, what a fucking ripoff.
Yeah, especially when you start comparing that to either a Guardsman or a Necron Warrior. You're kind of in that middle ground of like, oh, I'd rather have either.
Or compare it to the Dark Eldar Warrior, which is... So for 1 point more, I get a higher weapon skill, ballistic skill, initiative, leadership, and my gun is a 24-inch range poison instead of a 12-inch range.
Substantially better.
Yeah, yeah, like that's...
Just say substantially like, better.
Yeah, substantially better. And you're just like, fuck my life. No, so, I mean, that's the big thing with Eldar, you know, right now. You're not really going to run into a lot of Eldar players. Those you do run into, I suspect, are going to use Dark Eldar allies to try to cover some of the gaps that they have. So, you know, you can expect to see an Eldar-Dark Eldar hybrid that's going to borrow Dark Eldar warriors. Because, again, if you just want a static shooting base, they're better than Guardians for a nominal increase in points with more weapons options.
Exactly.
You know, you're going to take the flyer because you don't have one. You're going to do all of these sort of things to help kind of bolster your army up. If you are going to be a purist and not you rely on allies, you're pretty much just stuck using your competitive fifth ed lists, which aren't all that competitive, because the biggest thing with Falcons was always you could never kill them thanks to Hollow Fields and Spirit Stones and all of that. But with hull points, it doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter anymore.
You know, so I mean, Falcons and Waves, Fire Prisms, have, as a result, taken a massive, massive hit. So I think that that's going to be the difference, is you're not going to see the you know, two or three unkillable Falcons with Dire Avengers in there to score.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because Falcons can drop and you can't score unless you get out. You're going to start to see
that whole old 5th edition mentality is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's the same for any army that was playing the transport heavy objective pouncing type list.
I think realistically, the heavy support slot for every Eldar player is going to consist of 2 units of 3 Warwalkers, all scatter lasers, because that way you're throwing out four dozen shots, and a small unit of 3 Dark Reapers with the Exarch that has crack shot and I think quick shot are his two. Manning an Icarus Las Cannon Aegis defense line, because that is probably the most reliable anti-air in the game at this point, considering the fact that he gets to shoot 2 shots out of the 1-shot gun and it ignores jink saves.
There you go.
Yeah, so it's just like an 85-point upgrade onto your cheap 3-man squad. And that's kind of it. I mean, other than that, your troops options, you really have nothing super survival. It's, I don't know. Fuck that they need a new codex is really what I can say. The higher learning for Eldar is you really need a new codex.
That's really what it comes down to. But like you said, yes, Warwalkers are still the way to go. What are your views on Wraithguard right now? Because they do seem to still be very popular.
Yeah, you know, Wraithguard are a really good unit because you have a toughness 6, 3+ save unit that has a relatively small footprint. I mean, you know, for me, the biggest selling feature of Wraithguard is if you take a small unit of 5, with a spirit seer and throw them in a wave serpent, you're able to get them somewhere where those 12-inch range, you know, AP1 guns are going to do some really good things, especially with how they work when you're shooting at vehicles. Because I believe with Wraith Guard, it's a 4+ just a straight damage, which is fantastic in a world of hull points.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what's actually very interesting about the Wraith Guard, and I know that this is going to blow a few people's minds, but they have announced that they will be moving them into Finecast and selling them in a box of 5. And get this, they will be cheaper than they were in Pewter.
Lies.
This is what I'm being told by reputable sources.
Yeah, but that would make one model kit getting cheaper in Finecast. And
I was not saying that it was out a of trend like 200. Or proof that I would be when I've been wrong.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that would be like saying, you know, hey, I've got the local scoop. Mitt Romney is going to announce his running mate on Saturday, and it's a unicorn. You know, like, it's just like, okay, I'm with you. And then you say something so unbelievable, you're just like, fuck it, you lost me.
Well, I mean, the unicorn is still a better running mate than Sarah Palin. it can tell you which magazines it's read. But anyways... talking about politics here on Jaded Gamercast. I mean, I definitely like Wraith Guard. The models have always been very cool to me. I hate the fact that the poses are so bad. What kind of frustrates me about it is when they put something like that into Finecast, and they've been releasing all of this bullshit Finecast kind of leading up to it, before they released it, or before they announced that they were going to release it in Finecast, you were kind of thinking to yourself, like, well, they probably haven't done that yet because they're going to do a plastic kit eventually. Then they go release it in Finecast. It makes you think, well, they're probably not going to redo that model at all, are they?
No.
So, I mean, you know, that's how it goes. Quit crying.
Indeed.
Players. No, I mean,
if we're going to try to bring it back and really talk realistically what it is that Eldar players should be doing to be competitive.
Like playing Dark Eldar?
Yeah. Other
you
than
said
just,
it, not me.
Hey, it's still true because at least the Dark Eldar points costs aren't out to fucking lunch.
Yeah.
Stick to the heavy that I said in terms of troops. Take full Dire Avenger squads with Shimmer Shields, so at least you get a little more survivability out of them when they have to camp an objective.
Yep.
Big 20-man Storm Guardian squad is only about 160, 180 points, so they're not bad. The biggest thing is try to get enough boogeymen that your really worthless, completely unsurvivable troops choices can live to the end of the game because they're not getting shot at. So that means Fire Dragons. That means Howling Banshees. That means, like I said, the Warwalkers. Warwalkers should take some serious heat with the firepower they have. But one big thing that I do want to point out with Eldar, and this is something that you have over everyone in the game, is... you have the best anti-psyker fucking defense in the game.
Yes.
Because you have a tabletop affecting. So unlike the Space Wolves that have a range on it that lets you kind of sit out of that range and still cast with impunity, every single psyker always has to check on 3d6, take the two highest. Yeah. And anything over 12 on the 3D, it's not even take the two highest, it's just straight 3d6.
Yep.
And anything 12 and over is a perils. And since Perils right now is an auto wound, it's absolutely fucking fantastic because we are seeing the move towards more psykers.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's great. I honestly think that because of that, the Seer Council is a better choice than it used to be, which is hilarious.
Oh, absolutely.
It was a phenomenal choice.
And with their access to the rulebook psychic powers, you can actually come up with some pretty cool combinations. But like you say, I mean, the best way to deal with an enemy psyker, like a Space Marine Librarian psyker or something like that, is to kill it. You know, get it off the table as soon as possible. And anything that you can do to increase wounds to it in that manner for Perils of the Warp is excellent.
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. The fact of the matter is Perils of the Warp ignores invuln save. So even if he's a Librarian Terminator with a Storm Shield, he straight up just takes a wound on his Perils.
Yep.
And he only has 2 wounds.
Yep.
So, you know, you really kind of make them gun shy, especially if they're buying big, big psykers like Najal, like Tigerius,
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say gun shy. I would just say that there's an actual drawback.
But think about it. If I have a 2-wound character and the very first psychic power I try to cast, and if he's a big psyker and he has 3 warp charges, right?
Oh, I see where you're going.
I take a wound. Now, all of a sudden, are you going to cast that second spell? Are you going to risk losing him right out of the gates? Especially if this is turn one and you dying to perils gives him a victory point for killing your warlord.
The first unit.
Unit. Yeah, exactly. So it's just a, you know, he could get first blood if you have no other HQs. He also gets your warlord point.
Yeah. I think that you actually, that's a pretty good thing there. Do you still feel like the Seer Council has to go in a Wave Serpent, or you feel like you can deploy it?
I like jet bikes because jet bikes do give a 3+ save as well as the 4+ invuln you have.
The jink.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, the Eldar jetbike itself confers a 3+ armor save, and every Warlock and Farseer has
vault. The armor.
Yeah, they're ghost armor.
Ghost armor.
It's called.
Scarab ghost armor, yes.
Ooh, spooky. The only problem is if you do that, you do need to stick to Eldar psychic powers, which means no rule book, if just for fortune. Because rerollable 3+ and or rerollable 4+ invulns makes a huge tank unit. And again, you kind of get reach out and touch someone. So for me, I love the jetlock councils, as the internet calls them, because they're not clever.
We took one word in the first half of it, and we took the other word in the last half of it, and we put them together. It's Brangelina.
again, coming back to it, take a jetlock council. For your troop squad, take as many units as you can. Even if you just take a fucking 10-man Dire Avenger squad with no upgrades, it's still only 120 points, which is cheap. Super, super cheap. And then try to take as many boogeymen as you can. Wraithguard and Wave Serpents, Fire Dragons and Wave Serpents, Warwalkers. Because with all of those elements, especially, you know, your Seer Council and all these other elements, what you're really hoping to do is distract your opponent from focus firing your troops.
Yes. The things to remember about Eldar, the takeaways for this are Eldar are primarily a shooting army. Don't get too bogged down in the idea of trying to make a close combat Eldar army. And Shining Spears are still pointless.
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't even mention them.
Well, that is the only way to mention Shining Spears, is to remind everybody that, yes, they are still useless.
Hey,
all right.
come on, Lang. I mean, that's not fair to a 200-point unit for 5 toughness, 4 models.
Yeah, true enough.
Fuck off. Like, yeah, don't buy Shining Spears.
Do not buy Shining Spears. Unfortunately, they still suck. All right, so let's kind of get into the main topic for today's show here. We are well into 6th edition, and I think that we have seen, through way of the internet and through way of our own gaming community, kind of the response that we've been getting from people. And the response is relatively unanimous. I mean, there are still people who whine and complain about the game's too random now and things of that nature, who just did not want random charge ranges. It's the same people who are whining and complaining about the changeover from 7th edition to 8th edition.
Yep.
You know, it's that mentality that the things you have are worse now, as opposed to the mentality that you and I have, which is just the game has changed to this now.
Yeah.
Right. It's the same. I mean, there are people like we said, Spartan Games knows that it has made it because people on their forums are whining, complaining about how they're only going to play first edition now. And that the game is so much more terrible now the way that it is, which is just absolutely hilarious. I was reading some posts today, but I'll get to that later. But we want to talk about vehicles because vehicles is still the point of mystery, at least in my eyes, when it comes to 6th edition, because I think close combat armies are fairly straightforward. You have to make a choice kind of turn 2 or turn 3. Shooting armies are fairly straightforward. You have to play them, you know, 2 or 3 different ways to have them be, you know, as effective as you want them to be, depending on whether you're going heavy infantry or heavy artillery. But vehicles is the one that you kind of get a different answer from everybody. If you ask people about whether they're taking a lot of transports now, some say yes, some say no. You ask people about taking like Lehman Russes, oh, some say yes, some say no. You know, you ask about flyers, some say yes, absolutely, and some say it breaks the game because they're so terrible. So let's talk a little bit about transports first. Nathan, what's your viewpoint on kind of the use of transports and kind of how they're playing into lists right now?
I personally feel the transports are still fucking excellent. But take with a grain of salt, because in 5th edition, I never really felt like transports' best usage was as a fucking pillbox. Because that's really the biggest difference here, is in 5th edition, you really just wanted to camp inside your tank and shoot out the hatch if you had one. Otherwise, just camp inside it and sit on objectives. Now,
And wait.
And that's exactly it. Is the perfect game in 5th edition meant that my units in transport sitting on objectives never did anything. But I won the game because they were on objectives.
Right.
6th edition has changed this in a couple of ways. The first is changed the way that you can disembark from vehicles. Whereas before, you could kind of always disembark unless you moved flat out. Now, you can only disembark if it moves 6. And this really kind of comes into being more clever with your vehicles than you kind of had to be. Because now, especially if you're a combat army like Dark Eldar or Orcs who are able to charge from their open-topped vehicles, if you move more than 6, you can't even get out. So now, you know, like we said when we were talking about combat, you have to plan for an extra turn. You have to kind of wait a little bit longer, move a little bit further. So, I mean, that's one big change. The other, and probably the most significant, is that I cannot claim an objective if I am embarked on in a vehicle. And this is kind of why I think those old 5th edition players who would just camp objectives, use them as pillboxes, you know, you kind of see them just dropping the vehicles because they're not doing what they wanted them to do or what they have come to expect them to do. I do like troop transport still.
Mm-hmm.
I think 35 points for a Rhino is fantastic, even though it is easier to kill. You know, I can only move so far and disembark and blah, 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 blah.
Well, but it's not even about moving as far and disembark. It's just the exceptional level of mobility that we've gotten from vehicles now, just in general.
Yep. And that's what I was going to say, though, is it really...
I said it first. I'm smarter than you.
Rrrg, totally. right. It's just, I feel that in 6th edition, with the changes with random charge, you know, charge ranges and the changes to how the different unit types move, I feel like movement and mobility is more important now than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Static guard armies that didn't move, could still win games. Hell yeah, they could still win tournaments in 5th edition. 6th, I really don't feel like this is the case. You know, you've got long-range weapons that can be, you know, put on flyers. So, I mean, like, it's just, you've got all of these very, very mobile elements that do require a mobile force to kind of counter and deal with. Because at the end of the day, if my opponent is picking his fights, he's winning the game.
Yes.
You know, because he's only going to pick fights he's going to win. So I need to be able to respond. And that is why I still feel as if cheap transports have a spot in the game.
Yeah, trucks, rhinos, even Camaras, stripped down Camara.
Yeah, exactly. Don't buy any fucking upgrades. Use it to truck guys around and get them into position. Because if you give up mobility, you're giving up an advantage in the game.
Well, it really has changed things back to kind of the way that they should have been. The idea that transports are meant to transport, you know? We're taking the name literally again, as opposed to transports are things you hide in. You know, it's one of those ideas that now you have to start looking at transports. And I've asked a lot of people about this kind of between communities and on Facebook and things of that nature. And a lot of people have said, well, I don't take as many as I used to, but I still take one or two. Like, I feel like they're still very viable. They're still good. They're just not the thing that won you games like it was before. So,
I
think that that's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, let's even take it back, take it to another direction. This is like
take me to another place.
Nice. They still
understand the plan.
Wow, politics karaoke. You were all over the fucking map today. And besides, I thought you always opened up karaoke with Lola.
Oh, Copacabana.
Copacabana, that was it. Her name was.
You know, I love me some Barry Manilow, son.
That's right. You an angel. All right. Trying to move on. A 35-point Rhino is still going to add a level of survivability that an all-infantry force wouldn't give you. Because realistically, if I took 6 tactical squads, threw them all in Rhinos, yes, I could buy a seventh squad for the cost of those rhinos, but let's not forget that you still have to punch through the rhinos, strip the hull points off, take two, three, maybe four units of shooting to get my unit disembarked, which then allows you to shoot at them.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, even if we just look at it, again, like you said, using transports to transport things, you can still go very heavy on transports because unless you're playing Purge the Xenos, it's not straight kills. So, I mean, it's even less of a liability than it was in 5th edition with kill points.
Right.
And you get to use them to get your units up to where they need to be.
Right.
And that is what is going to win you games. You can, you know, I feel that transports are going to be phenomenal for shooting armies. I think that's what we're going to see the push towards, is if you're building a shooting list, you're going to use transports to make sure your guns are where they need to be. Mm-hmm. I think combat armies are the ones that are going to stay out of transports, use bikes, use jump infantry, use, you know, beasts, use all of these different unit types to close the gap that way, simply because of the fact that, again, I can only move 6 inches, disembark, and if I'm open-topped or I'm a land raider, I can then assault. Mm-hmm. Means I have to spend another turn in this fucking metal box.
Right.
And if you blow it up turn one, I'm hoofing it, I'll never get there. So I think that's going to be the biggest switch that we're going to see with transports. Shooting armies, like the, you know, very sort of tactical, heavy shooting marine forces, should still mount up in rhinos. I mean, 35 fucking points. You can't go wrong with that.
Well, the way that you can go wrong with that, Mr. Wrong, is that basically you are chancing very you are chancing very much on the first turn. If you don't get first turn, that they're gonna shoot your rhino and get a free victory point.
You know, that's true. However, there's a 50-50 chance that it's night fight, and if I'm hulled down, I have a 3+ cover save against them.
Like, I would say that that's the only drawback to taking transports. I'm actually agreeing with you.
Yeah.
But I would say that, you know, the only real thing that you have to be very careful about is how you're deploying your transports. The days of putting the 35-point rhino literally on that 12-inch line in the middle of the board are done. You cannot, as a competitive player, or in a tournament setting, just put that stuff right out there for your opponent. Because if he does get first turn, and if it's not night fight, that's a victory point. Because that should be a priority for you to take out. And then after the game's done, you can pretty much ignore them. Obviously, it depends on the army. But, you know, that free point is a huge leg up. And there's always a chance that it's going to do way more damage than just, you know, what it's worth. So you have to kind of be a little bit more tentative in the way that you are deploying those things. If you're deploying it behind a land raider, perfect. If you're deploying it behind cover, perfect. If you're, you know, making sure that it's in a position that you've deployed it opposite his heavy weapons, perfect. But you have to at least keep that in mind for that first turn, because you do not want to give up that first point by losing, you know, a cheap rhino or like a cheap war truck, because that's just a big mistake.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, like I said, take them. Don't just cut them from your list because the internet says they suck. Right? But it's just like, again, they have their uses. Their uses have just changed. And to me, I think that's the biggest thing with transports.
So true. All right. So let's talk about the next most disputed topic. And primarily, this is flyers. I think you kind of touched on this a little bit when you were talking about the Eldar and having the Dire Avengers. No.
Dark Reapers.
Dark Reapers, right. I always think like Executioners or something like that. But yes, Dark Reapers.
Those are Dark Elves.
Which an autocannon, yeah, I know. With an autocannon, the anti-air mount, it's a great combination. It's one of those things that right now we are very, very much lacking. And kind of the weird, you know, internet talk is around building lists to take advantage of this in the short term, which is a huge mistake. I mean, you're throwing your money away. You're going to be pissed off 3 months from now when, you know, a new book comes out and everything has anti-air, you know, or GW releases an FAQ and everything has anti-air missile launchers. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where, unless you're Tyranids, you're just waiting for that to fail, right?
Yeah, so, but Tyranids can't man guns because our FAQ fucks us.
But you can buy 400 points of Carnifexes.
It's 600 points, but no, I do know where you're going. To that, I just
but is it Carnifexi? Or would it be a murder of Carnifex?
I always use the murder of Carnifex. I feel like that is... Because, I mean, honestly, if we're really going to go into a strange thing, if not murder, I find Parliament is just sort of an awkward one.
A gaggle? A gaggle of Carnifex?
It's true.
I used to say school. For gaggle of Carnifex. All right, so flyers. flyers. I like the rules that they've created for them. I like the fact that they all start in reserve. I like the fact that you have to come off at zooming speed unless you've got blah, 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 blah rule. You guys know what I'm talking about. But basically...
I love blah, 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 blah.
The blah, blah, blah rule is pretty sick until they FAQ'd it with blah, blah, blah. Until we start seeing
it, just turned into blah.
The thing about it is we all know it's coming. So I'm going to say this right now. Lang from Jaded Gamercast is swinging his big J-list internet celebrity dick around. You're an asshole if you're taking advantage of flyers right now. That's just all it comes down to. I mean, if you're the guy with the Grey Knight's army where all your flyers are troop because you took a special character and, you know, you're basically making it so that the game is not fun for everybody that you play and you're able to notch 9 wins out of 10 on a regular basis... Good for you. You're an asshole. Nobody wants to play you.
Well, that's because he plays Grey Knights.
That's because he plays Grey Knights. He probably has some Necron allies. But really, speaking of Grey Knights with Necron allies.
No, those are Necrons with Grey Knight allies.
Oh, it was Necrons with Grey Knight allies?
It's still stupid, but go on.
Your wife was yelling at people. We saw the pictures. She was screaming at young men.
I was going to say, have you ever met my wife? All she does is yell at people.
I've met your wife.
It was rhetorical.
Yeah, I know. The big thing about it really is the fact that it's all going to change, and it's all going to change as soon as the next book comes out. We know that for a fact. Mm-hmm. And it's so ridiculous because it's like playing rock, paper, scissors when you know that the other half of that metagame is Necron armies. Seriously. I mean, anybody who sits there going like, oh yeah, dude, I'm just going to spam fucking flyers, dude, flyers until the end of time. You know you're going to have to play Necron armies like 50% of tournament.
You do know that the only army that does that are Necron armies, right?
Well, and that's exactly it. Like, the Necron flyer shoots down flyers because he doesn't have to roll the hit with a strength 10 AP 1 beam.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. We'll see if that gets FAQ'd away. It's hard to say. But I mean, at the end of the day, for my opinion on flyers is I think that the inclusion of them in the game is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Because some people lose their shit at the idea. I mean, fuck, we saw it right after 6th Ed when Matt on our Facebook page was just like, oh, they're OP as all get out. And you're just like, sure, if you're not planning for them. And that's why I love the inclusion of them, because now... when you are building a tournament list, you need some sort of anti-flyer. And what I think is brilliant about flyers is all flyers have the ability to just, you know, kick into top gun mode and gain the Skyfire rule. You just have to declare it. Right. So what I, you know, that to me is, like I said, what I love about it, because it's just like if I'm playing an army that has access to a flyer, flying monstrous creatures excluded because for some reason flyers are too hard for them to catch or shoot. I don't understand why they don't also have this rule. I think it would be excellent. You know,
because it's too like, much,
right? It would break the game.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it would be too much.
The ETC will probably ban flying monstrous creatures.
Let's talk about that at the ETC episode.
I cannot wait. I really, really cannot wait.
It really is spectacular. I'm not going to lie.
But like I said, what I love about flyers is that the best anti-flyer is a flyer. Yes. So it's just like, you know, armies that go second have this tremendous advantage because let's be honest, with reserves coming in on a 3+, you know, you are more likely to get all of your, well, not all of your reserves, but if all you have is one unit, you're more likely to get it on turn 2 than you used to be. Because before it was a coin flip. Now, you know, you have a really good chance of actually getting it. So if you go turn 2 and you have a flyer, he has a flyer, his flyer comes in, goes ooga booga and shoots at a unit. Your flyer comes in, top guns it and blows it out of the sky. Like, it's just, I think that it's a really good tit for tat. And for me, I love flyers simply because they are truly the boogeyman. People are buying Aegis defense lines because yes, flyers exist. And that was what you said, where it's just like it's very, very short-sighted. You know, people will take flyers to combat flyers. Like, it's just, it's hilarious because, you know, in my experience, and I have played against the Necron Flyer with the Doom Scythe and the Night Scythe.
That's correct.
I have played against the stupid chin gun fucking marine one. Hey, you've got a zit.
It's the storm something.
I think it's Storm Talon or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I have played against the orc ones. Like, I've played against tons of flyers. And none of them really have the kind of offensive output that even worries me. Oh, also Dark Eldar ones. I mean, sure, Dark Eldar ones can shoot off missiles. Great, I go to ground.
Right.
I'm fine. Oh, I lost three Hormagons. No! Like, it's just... So, I mean, none of them have the kind of game-breaking firepower that people have come to expect by reputation. And so, I don't care if I eat it for a turn and then have my flyer come out and shoot it. I mean, fuck, I have won games by ignoring your flyers, and I played an army once that had three flyers in it, and I just ignored them and was still able to win the game because they simply do not do enough damage.
Well, and that is always what the metagame, right?
Yeah, and that is simply, you know, and that to me is why I think flyers are fantastic, because everyone loses their shit at the idea of flyers, because there's this thing zipping around the table. I can't hide from it. It's always shooting at what it wants to shoot. But like I said, none of them ever really have the kind of damage output to make me really just like fucking sweat bullets at these things zipping around. So that's why, again, I think flyers are great. If you can take one, take one. If only so you have the free Skyfire.
Yeah.
You know, to again, I'll always call it going Top Gun, because that's really what it is this whole dogfighting aspect. And I truly feel that that is the counter to flyers right now. Is the best way to counter a flyer is to take a flyer.
Right. If you have access to a flyer. If not, ally with Necrons.
Right. Ally with Necrons or ally with Dark Eldar.
Right, exactly. And just go that way.
Ally with someone that has access to a flyer and use theirs. I play Chaos Demons with Imperial Guard allies.
Yeah, perfect. Well, I mean, the big thing that it comes down to is that we all know it's short-sighted. We know that anti-air is coming. We know that there's going to be a lot more stuff kind of on the way. Specific armies, I mean, we know that Tau are going to get changed. We know that Marines are going to get changed. And we know that we're going to see some actually new vehicles that are just going to be primarily anti-air vehicles. So I think that that's kind of the big question mark over flyers right now is, when are we going to start seeing ground-based anti-air vehicles like the Hydroflak tank and things of that nature, right?
Well, the Guard have the Hydroflak tank.
But does it have Skyfire?
Yeah, it does have Skyfire. Right, it does not have Intercept, which is what I like about it. Because now if you take Hydroflak... Because before, I think a tournament was won by a guy that took 9 Hydroflak tanks because... Fucking 3 dozen autocannon shots that were twin-linked would basically pop a tank every single turn. Like, every unit would pop a tank every time it shot. And he totally won a 5th-ed tournament with it. Now, yes, you can hit ballistic skill on flyers, but you can only snapshot on ground units, which I think is fantastic, because now you're going to see Guard players that are taking Hydroflak tank batteries specifically in case you have a flyer.
Yeah, and that guy is going to take Hydroflak batteries to eBay. Because he has too many.
Right. You know, so I mean, like I said, I really love flyers because they're such a boogeyman. You're going to start seeing people buying Aegis defense lines. They're going to take Hydroflak tanks. My only concern with flyers, and, you know, with you know, whipping your J-list celebrity dick around, I would like to do the same. Games Workshop is going to, like, have a flyer Cold War, where they're going to make ground-based anti-air so abundant that they're going to start throwing out armor 14, like four hull, like flying land raiders.
No, it's armor 14
with 4 hull points. Yeah, well, and that's exactly what it will be is you're going to start to see is once they swing the pendulum so far over that everyone has anti-air, they'll realize shit flyers are worthless and they'll start making broken as shit flyers that are almost unkillable.
Well,
I wouldn't go that far. Look, Games Workshop has no fucking futures planning. Like, this is not something where they release 6th edition. They're like, you know what? We have a plan. It is like the Cylons in Battlestar Galactica. Plan A, commit genocide versus the human race. Okay, that didn't work. What's plan B? Shit. Let's wing it. Like, fuck.
Oh, God, we're rebelling. damn it. So true. All right. So vehicles in general, kind of like your general Land Raiders, Lehman Russ tanks, their usage and the amount of return on investment that you're going to get from them has pretty much remained the same. They are slightly easier to kill, but for the most part, they're just as good at killing other vehicles, and they're still going to be reaping through troops kind of the same way as they did before. They're just not these indestructible monsters that never leave the table and just sit there and get immobilized four turns in a row. I think that that's kind of what's interesting about them is people are looking at them going, no, I still want to have two Predators or two Ball Predators or two Land Raiders or anything like that because I still want that firepower. You just have to plan for the fact that it's not always going to be on the table at the end of the game.
Yeah, well, what I find interesting about this class of vehicles is this class of vehicles always has very high armor values because they're basically just static gun tanks.
Right.
What I like about them in 6th edition is, since the edition has come out, there has been a push, at least online. I mean, honestly, in you know the games I play are still, you see quite a bit of 5th edition lists because people haven't had a chance to buy and paint and do whatever. But online, you see a huge push towards lower strength, higher rate of fire weapons.
Yes.
Autocannons. Hell,
been saying it for years now.
Well, same. I love heavy bolters. No one ever takes them ever, but they're fantastic. But what's really great about things like that is, you know, if someone takes a bunch of fucking autocannons, they can't hurt armor 13 reliably. You need sixes to strip a hull point.
Right.
Armor 14, you can't touch. Because that's truly the one drawback to other than costing 600 points, to that Carnifex unit that I've been kind of running with and dicking around with, is the fact that, yes, it throws out a massive amount of shots. Yes, they're ultralight, but they're only strength 6. So, I mean, even against armor 12, it really struggles to strip enough hull points off in a single round of shooting. Armor 10 and 11, it fucks its face in. You know, it's really reliable in that way. But battle tanks are usually armor 13, armor 14. So, right. I mean, that's where you're starting to see a little more survivability, because as people take off their melta guns and take plasma guns, or they swap out las cannons for auto cannons, these tanks actually gain a little bit of survivability as a result of the fact that those other weapons are better in every other situation. They're better at transports, they're better at flyers, you know, but they're worse versus battle tanks. So for me, I love battle tanks this edition. I think Lehman Russes are fucking amazing. Armor 14.
They were never bad.
No, they weren't. But everyone always just took fucking Vendettas filled with veterans.
You're
and
right.
Now I'm just like, why the fuck wouldn't you take this? You know, so I mean, I really, really like them. I love battle tanks. I think Predators, I mean, when Matty D went to that one tournament with the triple fucking dirt cheap 85-point autocannon heavy bolter Pred, he was just like, that's genius.
Oh, yeah, the Lehman Russ Executioner?
Well, no. The Predator with the autocannon and the heavy.
Are you talking about Predators?
Responses. Yes.
Because I've been drinking.
It's 85 points. It throws out 8 shots. The beauty of a tank like that is you can take 3 and it's not breaking the bank. I mean, realistically, 3 is going to cost you what one unit of Stern Guard vets without upgrades will.
Right.
And it throws out so many shots, and they're so worthless. If someone shoots at one and blows it up, you do not give a shit.
No.
And so,
no, because I think he played against my Necrons, and he had 2 Baals and one of those autocannon heavy bolter Predators.
Mm-hmm.
And no, he was mowing my units to pieces. It was only through sheer luck that I made as many will be back rolls as I did.
Mm-hmm.
But to this day, Matt Damon has never beaten me. And what was the rule after the last episode? Is however many times we bash Matt Damon, people have to drink.
apparently. No, but I mean, like, it's just things like that. So for me, I love battle tanks. I think that if you can get one for cheap, take them for sure. If not, try to limit the number, because I mean, people will still have melt guns. They'll still have things of that nature. But otherwise, honestly, I think you're better off taking a battle tank than a walker. Like, that's kind of where I see.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so it's just like, you know. Yes. If you're looking at it where you're just like, gee, do I want a dreadnought or do I want a ball pred? Take the fucking ball pred.
Well, and that's kind of the next thing that I wanted to talk about was walkers in general, because when you look at a sentinel right now, there's really no reason to take sentinels over a battle tank.
Mm-mm.
I mean, there's just no reason.
Other than cost.
Other than cost, right? Well, and it's not even that much cheaper.
Well, yeah, you know what? You're right. If you were to take a unit of three Sentinels with a gun that's worth a damn, like an autocannon or last...
Not heavy flamer or multi-laser.
Not heavy flamer or multi-laser. You're right. A unit of three is probably going to cost roughly the same as a single battle tank, and I think the battle tank would probably end up doing a little bit better.
Have a higher survivability, all sorts of stuff like that. But, I mean, we talk about walkers as well when you talk about dreadnoughts. And, again, it's one of those things. It's very similar to that standard vehicle class where they haven't gotten worse by any particular piece of the imagination. They have not gotten worse. So, for the most part, you know, I would still say, you know, dreadnoughts are still great for their points, for what you're paying in a Space Marine list. We've said this before, kind of way, way, way back on episodes. Every army has a unit in their list that is kind of discount for the points that you're paying for it. Yep. And for Space Marines, it has always been the Dreadnought. The Dreadnought, for the points that you're paying, is always kind of a real star of your game.
Yeah.
And even if he doesn't become a star, you're not sitting there going, oh, fuck, why did I spend 250 points on a Land Raider? So, you know, I don't think the Dreadnought has really changed dramatically. What is nice about walkers is the fact that having one be immobilized does not mean we shoot that pilot in the head and walk away from him and he's destroyed. He just ceases being part of the group. Thank you, Games Workshop. Thank you for not being stupid. We always laughed and joked about the poor Sentinel pilot who took a shot, an arrow to the ankle, and we had to put him down so that we could continue on with our mission.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, for me, though, I think you are going to see less dreadnoughts, though. I mean, than you did in fifth, because the thing with dreadnoughts is a lot of times the only dreadnoughts you ever saw were the autocannon dreads, the rifleman dreads, if you will. At least it's more clever than Jetlock Council.
They didn't call them rifleman dreads. It was something stupider.
No. The Grey Knight ones were stupider because they were Sifleman dreads.
Oh, right, because right. Sifleman dread was the one I wanted to die. Because the Rifleman is a mech warrior mech. And so I was just like, oh, okay, Rifleman, sure. But then when they said Sifleman, I facepalmed very loudly.
Yes, no, like I said, that is the Grey Knight only one. They are still decent. They are still good. I think that most Space Marine and Blood Angels players will kind of drop them in favor of other units, only because in both books the elite section is stacked.
Yeah, fair enough.
And that, well, actually, I guess in Blood Angels, those regular dreads are heavy, not elites, because their elites are the librarian dreads.
Right.
But no, I mean, like I said, it's just one of those things where you're just like, eh, I think you're going to see a resurgence of Terminators.
And I think if you have access to flyers, you're going to see flyers more than dreadnoughts, especially right now. Especially right now.
Absolutely.
Although so, I am looking forward to the Skyfire Dreadnought.
Nice.
So what would it be if it was a Grey Knight Skyfire Dreadnought? It would be a Skyfleman Dread? Skyfleman Dread. That's the one. Trademarked. Me. Oh, man. All right, so... let's get on here to the next little bit as we kind of wrap up the podcast. I wanted to talk about some of the new releases. So the new releases that we saw in the last few weeks here for Firestorm Armada was, of course, the that ground-based Firestorm game that takes place in the Firestorm universe, which we had as our last week's stupidity check. But they did release about four or five pictures of some of the new pirate models that we're going to see in the Marauder campaign book. So I wanted to talk about those for a bit. And the one that stands out in my mind is the, as I've referred to it, the Australian Death Star, which is basically the gigantic sphere-shaped prison ship. Get it? Because Australians are all criminals?
Nice.
Yes, which is very cool. I actually like the fact that they kind of created a ship that is a big sphere. In the fluff and the fiction, Keldorians in the Xenian League are supposed to just fly around in these big spherical shield ships, which I was very interested in seeing because, you know, I'm kind of a sucker for that, as you can see with my directorate, is I love saucer ships. Like that old school saucer ship look. Like I always, you know, call me an idiot, I get a kick out of it. But when I saw like the big sphere and all that kind of stuff, I thought to myself, you know what? I might paint up one of those. What do you think about the Australian Death Star?
You know, honestly, I'm not a huge fan of the shape. And the only because all of Firestorm, like, I mean, I get it, space, so it doesn't matter. I mean, fuck Star Wars, the Death Star. But it's just like all of the other ships in Firestorm, with the exception of the Relosa, really kind of just use that long, kind of sleek aspect when you're painting them up and you're looking at them. To me, when I look at that, I'm just like, fuck, that's just going to break your flight stand. You know,
I thought you were going to say that all the ships in Firestorm are somewhat aerodynamic, and I was just like, except for your Lego Dendrenzi.
Oh, yeah, are you fucking kidding me, buddy? If any of my Dendrenzi ships actually, you know, touched a planet, they'd be destroyed. You know, like the rules.
Like the rules say.
Hey.
All right, so what about the Omnidyne Dreadnought?
Sorry, I'm just going to click back. So
okay, the Omnidyne Dreadnought is the one that looks...
Yeah, no. Like I'm on their blog right now so I can see it. To me, I like it, but it looks kind of steampunk. You know, so
no,
it looks like it's kind of...
It looks steampunk.
It totally does.
Liar. Oh my god, I can't believe you
just
that.
Ruined it for you, didn't I?
You kind of did. God damn it.
You know what? Honestly, I actually really love the idea of the fluff, like when they talked about how they have boarding torpedoes.
Yes.
Like, that's fucking brilliant. In terms of the shape, I do prefer the traditional directorate look, the kind of very rounded, ovular kind of, you know, flying saucer. I mean, that's why you picked them.
Right. Well, let's make it clear. The Omnidyne Dread is not directly directorate, but it's one of the smaller corporations, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that is what it says. Like many smaller corporations within the directorate, blah, blah, blah. No, I mean, like I said, it looks like the Defiant with fucking pontoons.
Fuck you. Go to hell. All right.
Hey, listen.
I will never see it as steampunk. You need to stop saying that.
At least you are getting good ships. Did you see the Dendrenzi one where they're like, look, it's a planetary assault thing. People are afraid of the planetary assault. And I was just like, so it's a Firestorm invasion tie-in?
It is a Firestorm invasion tie-in.
Fuck you. And that's why I'm just like, that's stupid. My fleet gets shit.
All right, so let's talk about the one that seems to be getting the most attention is the Syndicate ships. We see a Syndicate battleship, and we are seeing the Syndicate heavy cruiser. And both of them, I refer to them as the Ferraris of the Firestorm universe, because these things are as sleek as it gets.
Yeah.
Somebody said that they reminded them of the Naboo ships from the Star Wars prequels, and I thought, oh, okay, yeah, sure, maybe. I think that if you painted them all silver chrome, that would be
pretty
cool.
Star Wars prequels? What? I mean, I don't...
You wouldn't, jackass. I think these ships look gorgeous. I'm kind of amazed that we're actually seeing this as the one that makes it seem like they are going to be their own separate fleet in the Marauder book. And again, this is all speculation at this point, because these are all things that they've just kind of said, oh yeah, we're going to do something. It looks like this. It's going to be in the Marauder mm-hmm. book. We don't know what's actually going to be released, unfortunately. It does make me kind of go... when I sit there and say, wow, they're already piling on new models and they still haven't finished all the models for the Xenian League and Alliance of Kurok.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not going to fault a game, especially a very young game, that are really trying to expand their universe. I'm not going to fault them for getting excited about new kind of ideas and running with them instead of sticking to their guns and finishing shit. Because, I mean, look at the juggernaut that is Games Workshop. They could care less. Like, they have no release schedule other than I felt like updating Chaos. You know, so I mean, like, I'm not going to fault a studio for doing that. I think the Syndicate look fucking sharp. I think the, I'm on their blog, so I'm just trying to find
the pathogen
stuff also looks very, very interesting. Very, very cool. So I mean, if they did kind of go ahead and create new fleets, I think that's great, because at the end of the day, with Spartan Games and with Firestorm Armada in general, they are trying to grow a fan base. And so Yes. It feels like they're kind of shotgunning out all of these different aesthetics and all of these different ideas in an attempt to see what sticks. And once they kind of have this idea, then they might start going in and start finishing up the ships and these fleets.
I think that's a great point, because they did that with Alliance of Kurok and the Xenian League when they released them, and what stuck was the RSN. So they're just like, right, full RSN fleet.
Yes. And that's the thing. So that's why, I mean, I'm not going to fault them, because fuck, those Syndicate ships are nice. And as we've been talking about forever, I was just like, man, if the Pathogen are full fleet with full models, I'll probably do them, because could you imagine zombie borders? What kind of fucking special rules they'd have about infecting crews and things like that?
That was what I said to you, and you were just like, oh god.
Well, I always saw them as like zombie ships, and then you were like, yeah, but imagine boarding actions with zombies, and I was just like, I came.
Yes, it was great. Okay, so that leads us to the stupidity check for this week. Which is something that is kind of permeating the internet. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the show when we said that, you know, you go and you read forums and people are bitching and whining, complaining, and that's how you know that Spartan Games has made it. They've hit the big time, is that people are going onto their website saying that they're boycotting the game because shit went away that they didn't feel it should go. And this is typical nerd rage, typical gamer rage. It's not a huge surprise. But what's really kind of ridiculous about it is, people look at fleets like the Reloza, and the Reloza is the one that's getting the most hate right now. They're still not considered to be the worst fleet in the game, because I think the internet still says the Directorate are the worst fleet in the game, which I have to enjoy.
Well, I mean, you never win
games. No, I do not win. Obvious. I do not win 80% of my games. But really, no, people have kind of turned on the Reloza and said, well, now that the Mar rules have been stripped and they don't get stealth systems anymore, they're fucking useless. But what they're not paying attention to is the fact that the advantages of that particular fleet. They're focusing on the disadvantages, and then that's making them feel like they're terrible. And what's funny about that is it's like playing a game of Warhammer 40,000 and whining and complaining because your Imperial Guardsmen are strength 3, right? Like, yeah. It's like basically going to Space Marines and just be going like, oh my god, they don't all have power weapons. That's bullshit. Why aren't they all Terminators? This is crap. And that's really what it comes down to, is that they do have things that set them apart from other fleets. They still have cloaking, and they still have mines on the majority of things in their fleets. The only other army that has mines to the level that they have is the Aquans. You could kind of say the Dindrenzi, but the Dindrenzi do not have the strength of mines that the Reloza have. And with cloaking used appropriately, it makes up for the fact that they're pretty squishy in range band 2. But that's the huge complaint right now. Oh, they're so squishy in range band 2. They can't take a punch. Oh, they're just terrible. They're basically Terrans, but dumber. But all it comes down to is, well, yeah, that's fine, but you're paying for all this other stuff. You know, like, I wish I had torpedoes on my front arc in my Directorate fleet. I don't. I have them on port and starboard, which means I'm not getting as many torpedo shots as I like. Reloza in turn 1 have strength 5 torpedoes on their standard cruisers. So they're throwing out very respectable volleys of torpedoes in the first round while cloaked without any restriction. You know what Directorate do in turn 1? Nothing.
Hey, that's not fair. You move.
That's right. We move and get shot.
Yeah.
That is what we do.
But that's exactly it. It's just like, you know, my friend Dindrenzi, my Dindrenzi accomplish fucking nothing until about turn 2, turn 3, when I get into that range band 2 sweet spot. Reloza can play a slow game. I mean, for them, if they do not move their full distance at the beginning of the game, that's an advantage for them and a disadvantage for their opponents. Because, like I said, I need to close. If I'm not in range band 2, I'm doing dick shit for damage.
You need to close into range band 2 with a fixed forward arc for your guns and your torpedoes. To the point where you cannot really dependably get your port and starboard arcs into fire at the same time. So what you end up doing is you hope that one of your gun racks is in range as you're trying to dry all of your fixed forward fire onto those one ships. What it also means is that because you're shooting all your fixed forward, if you destroy that ship, well, then those torpedoes are gone.
Yes,
absolutely. You know, so it's a frustrating thing. But then you look at Reloza and go, oh, their torpedoes are just forward arc? Oh, and then they have their best guns in their port and starboard? Hey, why not? Oh, and they can also drop mines? Well, that's interesting. So for me, you know, it's this weird stupidity check for people who are sitting there whining, complaining about Reloza, and you know who you are. But really what it comes down to is, you know, we talked about this earlier in the podcast, where it's just like, listen, the game has changed, and you need to play according to the way that the game has changed. You can't play your Eloza fleet like they're Terrans or like they're Cerulean's. They're a completely different fleet. They play totally differently, and you have to be a little bit more conservative, or as our friend James says, use their gypsy tricks, because that's how you win games. Like, that's how you come out on top with that fleet. But they can drop more high-strength mines than virtually anyone else in the game. And that's a huge thing that people can be using. That means if you've got one crippled ship with one hull point left who has no guns, you're still shooting good torpedoes and dropping a mine in the middle of a group of cruisers. And now that you roll all your dice for the one mine, and then that affects every single ship, yeah, they're a bit hit or miss, but a good roll is crushing an entire squad. Not just one ship goes down because you had a great roll and then the rest of the ships flop. It's boom, the entire squad is wiped off the table. So, I mean, you really do have to look at mines and torpedoes now that they're that much better in this edition and say, well, actually, mines and torpedoes is where Eloza excel. Maybe I should play to their strength instead of trying to play to their weaknesses.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's exactly it. Is, I mean, you know, to say that the people in charge of creating this game don't know what they're doing, it's hilarious because it's so egotistical. But you're absolutely right. Is when you look at what they could do with the power of torpedoes and the power of their mines with cloaking, at that point you kind of look at it and you're just like, so in other words, you're complaining that Reloza are not the easy button win. Muffin.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that is the biggest thing for me when I'm just like, really? Really? I mean, fuck. I don't know whether I'm getting more jaded, but I can't even stand like internet nerd rage anymore. I'm just like, I'll just shut the fuck up.
Well, I mean,
that seriously, you need to shut up.
That definitely is the case. The interesting thing about it is the fact that people will sit there and go back and forth and back and forth continually, kind of over and over and over and over again, screaming about the fact that this thing is so terrible, as opposed to just stopping and saying, okay, how can I make this terrible fleet good? You know, how can I play to their strengths? Not necessarily just looking at the shit you own and getting upset because now you don't own the good stuff anymore, but really just looking at it and saying, you know, if I just substitute this squad for this squad, you know, and split this into two good builds as opposed to one build, which is totally viable in Firestorm, not viable in 40K, viable in Firestorm, you know, that's the thing that you need to do, you know? And I mean, every fleet has great stuff for the Reloza. The shunt cruisers at 55 points apiece are fucking amazing. They're heavy cruisers with 5 assault points, strength 5 mines, cloaking, and big ass guns are fucking amazing. I wish I could have heavy cruisers that good. Yep. So, I mean, it's just you got to play to the strengths of the fleet, and you got to pull the stuff out of the bag that's really going to work for you. You know, and I mean, I'm not even talking about, you know, playing specific builds where you're talking double battleship or double carrier. It's just picking a strength, playing to it, and knowing the way that your fleet plays and using its abilities. For the longest time when Maddie was playing his Reloza, he never cloaked and never dropped mines. Yeah, you lost games. You know, it wasn't until I eventually convinced him that cloaking is worthwhile. So, I mean, and that's exactly it. That's what it comes down to, right? So, that has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.